and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I am Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
The hamster, right there. See, already I'm going to use that thing. And today we are talking about a band that feels so completely entrenched in the 90s for me that the second I started listening to their catalog and hearing the vocalist, the lead vocalist's voice, it was like I was transported back into a time of plaid shirts and what else? It's so hard to remember anything from the 90s that wasn't grunge, you know?
I mentioned this in the notes, and we could bring it up now. These guys are dripping in that post-grunge pop, post-pop, post-grunge kind of angsty acoustic rock.
Right. Yeah, they totally are. I mean, it's, well, let's say who we're talking about. We're talking about Toad the Wet Sprocket, band that formed in 1986 and had some big success in the early 90s. I was surprised to see that they had formed that early, but had some big success in the early 90s. A lot of people hadn't even heard of them until 1991.
Well, yeah. But here's the thing, being formed in 86, they are going so totally against everything that was happening musically at that time. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it was all hair metal all day long in 86.
And it's so maybe so prescient for them to go down that path because they started in 86, but there were a lot of bands that sounded like they were imitating their style, imitating Toad the Wet Sprocket style in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And these guys had it, you know, years before we even knew about them.
It's funny you say that because I actually made a list. I said, I think the Gin Blossoms were like a rockier version of them.
Yes.
Right. Jars of Clay was a more acoustic Christian version of them.
Right. Yep.
Ishwala was a more jealous numbers oriented of them.
Okay.
And Tonic, who wanted people to see them differently than.
Than Toad. Okay.
And then also that first, the band Live, that first live album was like a really pissed off version of them.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And even Counting Crows, you could say, you know, it's funny I bring up Counting Crows because I saw these guys open up for Counting Crows 3 years ago at the Mandalay Bay Beach. Really good place to see a concert.
But we saw Blues Traveler there.
Yeah. I think we talked about that maybe during the Blues Traveler show, but it was a good concert. It was a fun place to see a show where you can either stand in the water or stand in the sand or sit on a beach towel or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think because of the hotel, they have to cut their set a little bit short because there are people. I remember when Tina and I stayed in the hotel, which is now the Delano next to Mandalay Bay, and the two hotels kind of surround. Right, exactly. They cradle around the beach area, the pool area, and going to bed at 11 o'clock midnight or whatever it was, probably later than that in Vegas, we could still hear the concert even on a high floor with obviously no way to open the windows.
Yeah.
Like windows closed, high floor, we could still hear the concert going on, which was great because it was also it was one we were thinking about going to. It was a lost 80s concert with like Missing Persons and Flock of Seagulls and
Where Are They Now tour,
where it was
where the posters were actually on milk cartons with the band members.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Have you seen me? My name is Glenn Medeiros.
That's quite a pull. Nice job.
It was a hell of a pull. It wasn't even part of that thing, but it was
such a great pull.
All right. So let's talk about Toad the Wet Sprocket. As I mentioned, they alt-rock band formed in 1986 with some chart success in the 90s with a string of popular singles. You'll hear a lot of those, the clips of those on today's show. Their name came from a Monty Python sketch called Rock Notes, Rock Notes, where this was one of the bands, I think, that that Eric Idle was rattling off in this skit. They took the name and started calling themselves Toad the Wet Sprocket kind of as a joke, and then Glenn Phillips I'm scrambling this all up. I'm like trying to add stuff to your text that just doesn't make sense. Later, Glenn Phillips called it a joke that went on for far too long. On their website, it says that it was probably meant to be a temporary name and not something that they were going to keep forever.
My favorite part is this next bit where Eric Idle later was talking about the fact that he was driving on the highway in L.A. And the DJ comes on and goes, and that was Toad the Red Sprocket. And he says he almost drove off the highway because he couldn't believe someone actually did it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of that name was to be a band name that no one would ever use, genuinely use. And here he was hearing that on the radio. And now, Crunchy Frog. All the members of the band went to San Marcos High School in California.
San Marcos High School football rules.
There you go.
That's all I could think of when I saw that name.
Sure, except it's San Dimas. But,
it is San Dimas.
But we're just saving the emails. We know it's San Dimas. Just save your email. Glenn Phillips on vocals and guitar. Todd Nichols on guitar. Dean Denning on bass. Randy Guss on drums. And then when they toured, they brought Bruce Winter in on keyboards and vocals in 92. Paul Schaefer played keyboards with them in 1994 and 1996. Jonathan Kingman plays the keyboards, vocals, guitar, and all the way from 2011 to the current. And then Steve Brown played the drums for them in 1986 and left, and was replaced by Randy Guss. It should be noted that these guys are still putting out music. They're still touring. They released an album just a couple of years ago, and Glenn Phillips still very active. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But these are, these are nowhere near a one and done kind of band.
I was shocked to know just how active Glenn has been off and on throughout the time.
Right. Yeah. And he was only 15 when he founded the band in 86. Todd and Randy were 19 and Dean was 20. Their first public appearance was an open mic talent show. And surprisingly, they did not win. Which is a bummer.
After listening to their catalog, especially their early first couple albums, I'm convinced that them and Hootie could do a show together.
Toad and Hootie and the Blowfish and the the Wet Sprocket.
Hootie and the Wet Sprockets.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, now that I say that and kind of amalgamate all those names, there was a joke for a while, maybe just between my uncle and I, but all these bands that sounded the same. And we'd say, oh, who's this? It's Toad the Gin Sprocket, Big Head Todd, such and such, Big Head Toad, and the Wet Monster Sprocket Blossoms, or something like that. It was some big amalgamation. Now we can totally hear that. First album was 1989's Bread and Circus. They self-financed it through their label, Abe's Records, and you'll find the singles Way Away and One Little Girl on this album. One Little Girl made the modern rock chart, but didn't receive any attention, or didn't receive much attention from that.
Liked about 65% of every song on this album, which is, I love the buildup, but the buildup of the songs never really paid off. They would ramp up a little bit in the chorus and the pre-chorus and the verse and the pre-chorus. The chorus would kick in. There really wouldn't be a whole lot of payoff, and they go right back down to where they were in the verse.
They played it really safe.
Yeah.
It sounded like they were wanting to break out and do something out there and switch things up, but they were playing things safe. And I think you see that happen more on the later albums where they do take those chances and do chord progressions that are way different than what you're expecting.
Yeah. I just wish that sometimes, you hear the drums go bump, 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 bump. And then you expect something to happen and it never really did.
Yeah.
And it felt like I was playing with me a little bit. But, they're young. They're making their first album. I actually picked a song from my list from this album. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good, but I wish they had kind of let themselves take off a little bit musically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Let themselves go. Let themselves play a little bit more out there instead of kind of keeping confined to traditional chord progression. Let's see. The next album was Pale, which came out the next year, 1990. Started to see their sound and their songwriting skills mature. They signed with Columbia Records during the recording of this album. They didn't want to record Pale with Columbia, but they worked with them to reissue the first album. So that was kind of a benefit of Columbia. Jam and Come Back Down were the singles from Pale. The album wasn't a success, but the singles got heavy airplay on college radio.
And the days of college radio.
I know, right? And you know, that harkens back. It's like, I wonder what, because there's still radio stations on colleges everywhere. What are they playing? Are they also kind of playing these undiscovered indie bands, or are they leaning more towards pop?
I'm hoping they're still trying to be bleeding edge with what's emerging.
I would hope so.
I mean, that's what college is all about, is finding a new thing. So
exactly. Being the guy who discovers, like, oh man, this new album by this indie artist, man, it's totally awesome.
If they're playing Gangnam Style, I'm disappointed in colleges.
Here's the new one from Demi Lovato. Weather on campus today is going to be bright and sunny. Yeah, I imagine it's probably still the way we remember it. Their first video for One Little Girl started appearing on 120 Minutes on MTV with Matt Pinfield. Wow. Remember that guy?
Look at you. Yeah. The only MTV I watched that wasn't Headbangers Ball was the Daily Top 10 before it turned into...
Before it was Carson Daly.
Yeah, the Carson Daly Show. Yeah.
Right. All right. So then they followed up Pale with Fear, which came out in 1991. This is where people really started taking notice. And a lot of the songs that you probably know by Toad the Wet Sprock, at least their earlier songs, come from this album. What's that?
That's both of the songs you know.
Oh, no, no way. I think people, I bet you people know like three, maybe even four of the songs.
I'm sure the population knows more of Toad than they do Level 42.
Sure. Yeah, probably. This is where they did finally see the success that they've been working towards. And the big singles from this album, All I Want, Walk on the Ocean, reached the top 20 of the Hot 100. And this became the band's first RIAA Platinum album.
I want to know what that kind of success does for their back catalog. Do they pick up sales? Do they maybe get bumped up into gold or you know, some sort of status because of the popularity of that one album?
Yeah, I'll bet they do. I mean, I'm sure that increases sales of the older albums because people, you come out with an album, people love it. They love Fear. They don't want to wait until the next album. They want more. And if they find out like, oh, there's other albums by Toad. Great. Let's go pick those up and listen to those. And I'm sure that's what happened in this case, that people went back and listened to Pale and probably Bread and Circus as well. And probably, started, going through the back catalog. Now you never hear though of an album going gold or platinum or double platinum after the next album has come out. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they just stop tracking it. Once you've made another release, maybe they don't track the older albums and how they may have improved because maybe. Of the release. Yeah. Yeah.
Every time you say Bread and Circus, I always think it's the Sex and Candy cover band.
Oh.
The Martian Playground cover band.
I was thinking about the Star Trek episode, Bread and Circuses.
Oh, right.
It's some phrase. I don't know what it's like,
Hippies one?
No. This is from the original series.
Well, yeah, the Space Hippies would be from the original.
Oh, I was thinking it was the one with the hippies in the cargo bay. No, I guess those were like Irish people on the cargo bay. let's see here. I'm looking it up because I do want to know the story. So it is a metonymic for a superficial means of appeasement. In the case of politics, the phrase is used to describe the generation of public approval, though not exemplary or excellent public service or public policy, but through diversion, distraction, or the mere satisfaction of the immediate shallow requirements of a populace.
They strong and the jealous ones, feel
That sounds awfully timely.
I was going to say, well, nothing like that going on these days.
I dare you to teach that phrase to Scott this week.
Oh, gosh. Right. Brett, hey, Scott, have you looked up Brett and the Circuses? Right? Oh, geez. All right. So because of the popularity of Fear, they started appearing on soundtracks and on compilation albums. For example, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. Remember there was a movie? With Christy Swanson playing Buffy, and Pee Wee Herman as the vampire. It was great.
And Rutger Hauer.
Was Rutger Hauer in that too?
He was in Big Bad.
Oh, wow. Did not remember that. But the movie featured the song Little Heaven, which was also on the soundtrack. In 1992, Seven Songs Seldom Seen was released on VHS. Which I'm guessing is like a collection of their videos from Fear.
I'm assuming so.
Yeah, Five Live was released in 1992. Again, probably a live album. So I Married an Axe Murderer included the song Brother on the soundtrack. And the band continued a fairly aggressive tour schedule during all of this stuff. In 1994, they released the album Dulcinea. After some heavy touring, the song's Fall Down, great song, which reached number one on the modern rock charts as well as number five on the mainstream rock charts. The other single was Something's Always Wrong, that also charted. This album was certified platinum. They appeared on the 1994 collection Acoustic Dance Party, jumping on that unplugged trend that was really huge in the 90s. And in 1995, they followed up Dulcinea with In Light Syrup, Toad the Wet Sprocket In Light Syrup. You can't just say In Light Spirit, you have to say the full title, Toad the Wet Sprocket In Light Syrup, because then it sounds gross. this was like a compilation of B-sides and rarities. They put Brother on this album as well for people who didn't get the Axe Murder soundtrack. I have both. It also contained the song Good Intentions. Good Intentions, which was included on the Friends soundtrack as well, along with Hootie and the Blowfish's I Go Blind. This album, In Light Syrup, was certified gold in 2001.
See, that was...
Oh, yeah. And they had released albums after that. Yeah. So there you go. People going back and buying In Light Syrup because they want their Toad the Wet Sprocket completion... collection to be complete. Right, exactly. All the sprockets. After Dulcinea, they released the album Coil in 1997. They started including a little bit more of an electric rock sound in their music, and also featured the hit Come Down. And it's funny because I get Come Down and Fall Down confused. Like if you say, oh yeah, how does that Toad the Wet Sprocket sound Fall Down go? It's like, oh yeah, or Come Down go, oh, when will you come down? But that's Fall Down.
Okay.
See? He did the same thing.
No, yeah. I was not a Toad aficionado until this week. So sure. I'm not as deeply familiar with their melodies as maybe you are.
Right. Yeah, these guys were definitely in my ballywick. I bought Fear. I bought Dulcinea. I didn't buy Coil. And listen to that this week for the show. Yet, right? Exactly. you know, if there is an inexpensively priced Toad the Wet Sprocket box set out there, I probably would pick it up because I enjoyed this week a lot listening to this music.
Yeah, during this period of time, I was trying to single-handedly keep thrash metal alive and in business. So I didn't pay
You're
a whole
the
lot
guy.
Of attention.
You're the one who was doing that.
Yeah, that's I listened awesome. To a whole lot of Megadeth and. I was still deeply ingrained in grunge, so.
Right, right. Let's see. Also on the album Coil was the single Crazy Life, an earlier recording of it had been on the soundtrack for Empire Records. disclosure here. I had the soundtracks to Empire Records, Friends, So I Married an Axe Murderer, and
Buffy. Please say Buffy.
Oh, I didn't have Buffy. I don't have the Buffy soundtrack. Thought there was another one in here that we mentioned that that I had. Yeah, had all the stuff. They also released Whatever I Fear, which didn't chart. The album failed to reach any sales benchmarks, and this is often attributed to the label not actively promoting the album.
So are you familiar with the band Billy Pilgrim?
I am. The song Get Me Out of Here? Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned them before. I'm a fan. There are moments of this album that really felt like Billy Pilgrim.
I can see that. I the only song that comes to mind, and I know I've heard so much more of Billy Pilgrim than just the one song, but that's the only song I can think of. And that was also another one of those that felt very entrenched in the 90s, that acoustic, you know, that acoustic sound. The band broke up shortly after Coil in 1998 to pursue other projects. Glenn Phillips started a solo career pretty much immediately after the breakup. He has close connections to the band Nickel Creek, and they often perform together.
That's the fathers of Nickelback, right?
No, it is so not.
So let me go back to the band breaking up. Is this more of a Level 42 thing, or is it they really just wanted to do something else? Because I asked this question because Glenn went on and did a whole bunch of solo stuff. Yeah. But the other members of the band stayed together and formed other bands.
I would bet that it was more a case of Glenn just wanting to maybe do some stuff that he'd been thinking about that didn't involve the band. Like some, you know, I've got some songs in my head that don't need a full band. Let me go ahead and release some solo albums. And then the other two guys are like, well, you want to keep going, play together? Sure. Let's do that. Cause it doesn't seem like from any of the things that I read that, Glenn Phillips is a megalomaniac, you know, or, you know, a slave driver when it comes to working with other musicians. It so seems
He's more Kim Wilson and less what
Mark King.
I was going to say Matt, Mark, whatever, King.
Right. Yes, I would say that's the case. More Thomas Kalnacki than Mark King. How's that?
Okay, yeah.
So he also, let's see, we talked about Nickel Creek. Yeah, they recorded an album together, Glenn Phillips and Nickel Creek, called Mutual Admiration Society in 2000. They finally released it 4 years later in 2004. In 1999, P.S., which was a retrospective of Toad the Wet Sprocket, featured a couple of new tracks that were recorded with most of the original lineup.
So I don't know if it was on this album or
it
one
was.
Of the others.
Where yes, it was.
Hold Her Down is on there. I have no idea what that song's about, but on the surface, it's some pretty rough business.
It is. I looked it up because I was curious about that too when I heard that. It is an anti-rape song. If you go to Sung.
Good job of containing that.
Did you read all the lyrics, Hammond?
Still, it sounds very first personally and encouraging instead of anti.
Yeah, I think if you read the lyrics, and I didn't read the lyrics, so I can't speak to this with any veracity, but I think if we were to read the lyrics, it might be more apparent that it is while it might be sung from a first person, it's not a pro holding her down kind of situation.
It's not very well conveyed on a casual listen, and I don't know. If they're trying to make a different point, they probably should have written different lyrics for it or something.
Right. Well, it's funny you say that because on Song Meanings, that is what actually was said. So let me pull that up here. Song Meanings, the way they describe it is, let's see here. Or was it Song Meanings? There was some thing that I read. Maybe it was All Music or Wikipedia that talked about how this song is often misconstrued as being a song about rape.
That means it's
I'm
not,
sorry that it was pro.
That means it's not the listener's fault if it's often
right.
misconstrued.
If it's often, yes, true. I mean, they talk about I would have a hard time facing you, this crime, the shame of what a man can do. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, even reading the lyrics, if he were to say, no, I wrote it with the intention of it being anti this, and it's an angry song about this act, I'd say, okay, I can see that because you're saying that. But if I were to read the lyrics without hearing that, yeah, I guess I would. I would kind of agree with most listeners that misconstrue it as, yeah.
We could play this in a creepy back-to-back song with that song by Styx about the girl.
Oh, no, let's not, please. Yeah, I remember I can't remember. It was like, you're only 9, but you're long. I know. I don't care what it was. Anyway, I don't want to make it. I don't want to make that one worse than it was. But it was pretty bad. During the early 2000s, Glenn Phillips released 3 solo studio albums. Abulum in 2000, Winter Pays for Summer in 2005.
Three feet thick, a new drug, won't hurt my hair. Won't make my mouth too dry or my eyes too red. It won't make me nervous, wondering what to do. One that makes me feel like I feel when I'm with you.
And Mr. Lemons in 2006. He also released a live album, Live at Largo, in 2003. Meanwhile, Todd and Dean released an album in 2001 for their project Lapdog called Near Tonight. They followed that up the next year in 2002 with an album called Mayfly. And in 2004, the live album Welcome Home was released. It was a recorded show from the height of their popularity in 1992 during the Fear Tour. So it was all the big hits, kind of the big hits that put them on the map, recorded live. In 2006, they began touring again in small venues in short-run summer shows. And in 2006, Glenn released a solo EP called Unlucky 7, a collection of outtakes from the solo Winter Pays for Summer album, and then one track from the 2002 album that never came out, a scrapped album that he never released.
So in 2000, yeah. One thing I can say about these guys is they're really good at naming things.
Except for their own name.
Yeah. I mean, there's some really good song names. There are some really good evocative wording they use as far as titles and stuff like that, which I do admire them for kind of being thinking outside of just the lyric in many ways.
It's a very poetic thing when you can write a song and then come up with a title for that song that isn't just, well, it's the thing we keep repeating in the chorus, you know?
We're going to name an album and a song, and the main word in the song is all going to be Thriller. Good.
Right.
And I'm not knocking that. It's fine. It is what it is.
Hey, could be like Talk Talk. We're the band Talk Talk. Let's record a song Talk Talk and we'll put it on the album Talk Talk.
Or the.
They never released a song called the.
That you know of.
That I know of. And it's really he. It's Matt Johnson. But Living in a Box did that. Big Country kind of did that.
The album they did. Let's just not say kinda. They pretty much.
Well, they kinda did. The song was called "In a Big Country," but the band
it was on a big country, by Big Country.
Right. It was on Big Country by Big Country.
It's all those things you could do to a mountain, except it was in a big country.
It's like a lover's voice across a mountainside. Let's see. Where were we? 2000. 2008. There we go. Thank you. Yes. In 2008, Glenn released an EP inspired by private space travel called Secrets of the New Explorers. Also in 2009, Glenn Phillips worked with the Works Progress Administration, the WPA, releasing an album of that name. It was actually kind of like a little bit of a super group. I want to pull up the list of who was in that. Because so I want to say
full disclaimer, I didn't recognize any name other than Glenn, so I didn't write it down. I'm sorry.
Oh, really? Okay. No, no worries. I want to say it was like
a girl and a guy in a pizza shop.
I'm guessing that the Wikipedia page that I landed on is the actual Works Progress Administration and not the band. Yes. Here we go. Works Progress Administration Musical Group. So it was Sean Watkins, Glenn Phillips, and Luke Bulla. They also had Benmont Tench. You know Benmont Tench. He was a member of, he was like a session musician. He was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Oh, right. Okay.
He's the keyboardist for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Okay. Sean Watkins. Why do I know his name? Oh, Nickel Creek. Duh. That's why. That's why we know Sean Watkins and his sister, Sarah Watkins, because they're from Nickel Creek. Pete Thomas has been the drummer for Elvis Costello for like years.
Yeah.
And I don't recognize Davey Farragher. Maybe I will if I look him up. John Hyatt. Oh, okay. Yeah. He's been working with, he was with Cracker in the 90s and John Hyatt's band, and he's also a member of the Imposters for Elvis Costello. So a double Elvis Costello connection there with that one.
So was Cracker doing all the music for the Keebler Elves?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, only when they performed at the Ritz.
Well,
you're welcome. You're welcome. Dad joke number 5.
We kind of teamed up. That was a comedy routine right there. That was as much of a bit as you'll get on the show.
I know. Yeah, you totally set me up for a nice little lob over home plate there. In 2010, Toad the Wet Sprocket announced their official reunion as a full-time working band. And I pause when you get
sorry.
Something.
I was reading next line. This is a really important distinction for a lot of people in creative fields, like musicians and actors and stuff like that, because when they make those declarations that we're doing this full time again, right. That means that they're focusing on that as their job instead right. of a hobby or a part-time job or whatever. So the fact that they made this announcement was a huge, huge thing saying they're coming back together.
Yeah, it totally was. And, you hear these reunions and a lot of times or sometimes the artists are still intending to do solo stuff or be part of other projects, but it's like, well, no, we're doing a reunion because we need money. And these guys are like, no, we're back in this full time because we love it and we want to keep doing it.
We missed interlocking our sprockets.
Right. Oh my. part of this reunion was to re-record some of their older hits because of licensing reasons. The label owns the masters and the band makes very little money from them. So to be able to sell the songs for film and TV, they had to record them again. So that re-recordings was released in 2011 as All You Want, which was basically a new greatest hits album. But everything on there was newly recorded, and they released it in digital format, disc format, and featured new studio versions of their hit songs. They didn't own a lot of their masters, and they got control back of those songs because they re-recorded this. It's interesting. Squeeze did this with Spot the Difference, and I think we've even talked about this.
ELO did it.
ELO did. That's where it came up recently, right? We were talking about Jeff Lynne releasing his pseudo greatest hits album that was just re-recordings of things. And it's funny, if you're a big fan of these bands and you listen to these re-recorded versions, it's weird because it feels like it's familiar but unfamiliar at the same time. It's like, oh, there's that usual guitar twitch that's right there, but I didn't quite hear that, or it was lower, or he didn't quite sing that vocal exactly the same way as he did back in 1991. I noticed that. I mean, you know, being a huge Squeeze fan, I noticed that tremendously listening to their Spot the Difference album, where they did the same thing. And I'd hear these little differences, but not many, but little tiny differences that would make the song, I don't know, maybe kind of interesting again, you know?
The interesting thing too is the fact that people's voices change as they get older. They change register, they can change key, the shape of their head can change the way they resonate. I mean, the body goes through changes as you age, so it really does change people's voices. I mean, it's one of the things I think, this is just my opinion, but I think Freddie Mercury never had his teeth fixed because he was afraid he was going to change the way his voice sounded.
Oh, wow. I believe it. I believe it.
I mean, that's just me looking at Freddie Mercury thinking, dude, fix your teeth. But at the
I can see him not wanting to shave his mustache off for the same reason. No, it provides a certain warmth to my upper lip that comes out in the music.
But I mean, I think that those things happen. And depending on how long it is between them recording an the original and the new one, there could be some significant changes just in the key it's done in, because they can't hit some of those notes like they used to when they were kids.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally true. And I'm trying to think of a really good example of somebody whose voice has changed a lot over time. Bob Dylan, actually. You listen to early Bob Dylan stuff,
and I can understand him.
And you can understand it. And it's not, you know, he's fallen in, not fallen in, but he's developed this method of singing that's so very different from his older stuff. And from what I hear, speaking of Bob Dylan, another great example of this, when he performs All Along the Watchtower these days in concert, it's a lot more like the Jimi Hendrix version than it is his original version.
Another good example is Paul McCartney. His voice has changed a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Over the course of his career, which leads people to do the conspiracy that it's not really the same Paul.
Sure.
When he died, that's a whole different conversation for a different show.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever do the Beatles on Soundography. I feel like the Beatles have been pretty well covered from
bread to circuses. We could do like, you know, musical conspiracies or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that would be that'd be a great episode. All right. Put that on the list. So around right before the release of All You Want, after they'd done their recordings, in December of 2010, they actually released their first new track in 11 years. It was a cover. It was a Christmas song called It Doesn't Feel Like Christmas, which was originally done by Sam Phillips.
Obviously recorded in California.
Probably, which is, you know, where a lot of those Christmas songs were written. Like Let It Snow was written because it was somebody in the middle of summer in California saying, it's so hot and I sure wish it would snow. But they, you know, made fire delightful and all that stuff. Also in 2010, as a Christmas gift to his fans, Glenn Phillips made his unreleased 2002 Tornillo album available through Bandcamp. This was the album that we talked about earlier that he scrapped. Back in 2002. So he said, all right, you can have it. Merry Christmas and no receipt. He also released a self-titled EP of his project Plover and a full-length album of his project Remote Tree Children as well. So he had a bunch of different side projects going on besides WPA and his solo stuff and, of course, Toad the Wet Sprocket. In 2012, 5 Live 2 was self-released, digitally released, again, a live collection of tunes. And in 2013, they released their album New Constellation.
Buddy, just can't trust your senses.
The title track was the first single that they had released in 16 years. They marketed the album via Kickstarter. We've heard of that. Yep. Their goal was to raise $50,000 for the album. They got to that level in less than 20 hours. When the campaign finally ended, they had raised over $200,000. They also released, in addition to the title track, they also released the song California Wasted as a single, and a revamped, reworked Lapdog song, See You Again, was on this album titled I'll Bet on You. I love that too. Like when you get iterations of a song, different songs from artists.
It's odd because that happened a lot between Dave Mustaine and Megadeth and Metallica, because he'd written a lot of their early stuff. So every now and then these kind of recycled almost Metallica songs would pop up on Megadeth albums with different titles and different lyrics.
Oh, wow. Wow. And probably, you know, a similar melody, like, wait a minute, that sounds like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. It's pretty good. They're one of the best ones is on their first album, Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good. He has a song on there called The Mechanic. And on the Metallica's first album, they have the Four Horsemen song. I think it's just called The Four Horsemen. Okay. Anyway, they're the exact same melody, rhythm. Everything's the same except for the lyrics.
Huh. Cool. That's cool. In 2013, they released another live album, Live in the West. Again, another self-released digital release. In the Round Revolver which again was another digital self-release. They kind of took things into their own hands and
seemed to be a big fan of Bandcamp,
which is great, and Kickstarter probably, right?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, 2015, they released their most recent album, Architect of the Ruin. It was self-released as a digital album and an EP. Six songs, I think, on that.
It's actually one of my favorites we listened to, I'll be honest.
It is really good. It doesn't feel like, hey, we're trying to recapture our old glory. It feels like it's a solid album or a solid EP, six songs. So
I would have been happy if they called this Fear Not, because it's as far away from fear as they could, being the same band.
Oh, well said, sir. Clever.
I worked on that all week.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Fear Not. Perfect. Lapdog, the side project for Glenn Phillips, has since been ended, and Todd Nichols is working Nashville writing songs for country acts.
So I can totally see this, as I feel like that there are some influences that were not as alt rock as much as they might have been, like alt country throughout some of these listens. And so when I read that he was moving to Nashville to work on writing songs for country artists, like, duh.
Yeah, right. Yep. Nope. Totally true. So tell us, Hammond, about some of their statistics, their accolades.
They have two platinum albums and had a few songs break into the top 20. They were on a bunch of soundtracks in the mid-90s, and Brian,
I have almost all of them.
Exactly. I'll get you Buffy for Nerdtacular. Relax.
Perfect. Oh, thank you. I feel like my Toad the Wet Sprocket collection will finally be complete.
We should start a band called Spacely Sprockets and do chiptune covers of Toad songs.
Oh, that's great. See, look at that. Well done.
Yeah.
All right. There's Stairway to Heaven songs. Some obvious ones here. Something's Always Wrong. Fall Down. Crazy Life. All I Want. Walk on the Ocean. Everything's better. And everything's safe. Walk on the ocean. I like that you have your choice is Walk on the Ocean. I could totally see that, because that was the first song I remember hearing by Toad the Wet Sprocket and being like, oh, this is really, really good.
Yeah, my money's totally on Ocean. If it's not Ocean, it's All I Want. I'm sorry.
Yeah, All I Want was such a big, big song for it. I'm going to say, because I've even seen them in concert, and they did both of those songs.
Do they do a medley, or do they do them individually?
No, they did them individually.
Oh, that's good. Good for them.
And this was even his opening act for Counting Crows. They did, you know, they did maybe 10 songs as an opening act. They did quite a bit.
Well, good.
I would guess, I want to go off the board, but I think you're right with these. I'm going to say they would have done most of their touring for the album Fear. So I will say All I Want is going to be the... going to be the big one. And the actual retail price of Toad the Wet Sprocket is, oh dude, you won't believe this. I feel like you need to look at the setlist.fm, because tied for first place are two songs, All I Want and Walk on the Ocean. How awesome is that?
That's the best.
Yes. And it's not like, you know, it's not like there's just a few things recorded. I mean, they've got 407 shows listed in here. And so, you know, they've got that. Well, I don't know if they have 407 shows. I wish I told you how many concerts they have listed in here. But it looks like they performed All I Want and Walked on the Ocean as part of all those. By the way, third is Fall Down.
Oh, wow.
Something's Always Wrong is fifth. Good Intentions. Good Intentions is such a great song. It's funny that that was just kind of like a side compilation kind of thing.
So one of the things I noticed is they pick really good cover stuff.
Yes, they do.
Their version of I Want a New Drug was really, really good.
Yeah, very down-tempo, differently delivered, almost like a blues song.
Mm-hmm. It was, it kept them in Toad world, but they dabbled in Huey land pretty well.
Yeah, totally. No, I totally agree. And it's funny that I'm trying to see what their first cover is. Ziggy Stardust is the cover they play the most in concert. Down at number 43, they've done that 34 times, but also Glenn Phillips covering a song by Glenn Phillips called Amnesty. Can't really count that as a cover when it's, you know, your own song. Let's see. Cinnamon Girl.
Everybody was covering Cinnamon Girl in the 90s.
It wasn't easy. I could even cover Cinnamon Girl. It's so easy to cover.
I mean, Typo Negative did Cinnamon Girl for the Blair Witch 2 soundtrack.
Right.
Which I own.
Okay, good. See, I don't feel so bad. I'm sure there's a lot of death metal on the Blair Witch 2 soundtrack. That's awesome. All right. Well, let's get into our lists here. And we've got our playlist. This is where we pick some songs that probably aren't on the Greatest Hits album. They've had quite a few Greatest Hits album, even the newly recorded Greatest Hits album. And I think a couple of these, one on my list, one on your list, probably do land on those. But
I'm not ashamed to say one of mine does for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. If you're going to admit it, then I'll admit it for you. All right, first one for me is from 1989's Pale album. It is High on a Riverbed. This was the first one, and it came after the singles Come Back Down and Torn and Don't Go Away. This one was just a really cool ballad that did some very interesting stuff in the chorus as far as chord progression. And Tina and I were listening to this. Sometimes I make her listen to the albums for Soundography along with me. And when we got to that song, she's like, oh, I really like that. And this was early. This was, you know, 1989. They were just getting started. Glenn Phillips wasn't even old enough to drink, and he was writing amazing songs.
The band could.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Next one is, I want to say it's the opening track on Fear. It's called
Don't
Is
Be
It
Afraid
For
to Say It.
Oh, Fear. I get it. Yes. No, Walk on the Ocean is the opening track. Is It For Me? It's one of those that I can listen to the lyrics 1,000 times and still not be 100% sure what they're talking about. But it sounds like a group of friends who are
holding
sneaking
someone down.
No, that's horrible. A group of friends who are sneaking into something that they're not supposed to be sneaking into. House upon the hill. And if we met at 4 a.m., then we would know for sure. We carry the ladders and lean them against it and climb them as we look. Because they meet at 4 a.m. and they take a ladder, but somebody kicks the ladder and Bradley falls down and his leg never healed right because
this
of that.
It's like a grim Ben Folds song.
It's like a, okay, here we go. Bradley says it's haunted, the house upon the hill, and if we meet at 4 a.m., then we would know for sure. So it's right there in the opening lyrics. I don't know why, I was acting like it was so vague. The first two lines pretty much explain it. Some guys that take some ladders and go and break into a haunted house at 4 o'clock in the morning. But at least they take sandwiches.
Yeah, good planning.
That's in the lyrics. But poor Bradley. Never his leg never healed right. The next one is on the album Coil, and it's called Desire. You listen to this and you're blown away that it's a Toad the Wet Sprocket song, because it sounds super bluesy, almost like that I Want a New Drug cover. It probably around the same time recorded as that one, but it's super, super bluesy and I love it. The next one is Nancy from Dulcinea. At first listen, because the lyrics say you take Nancy for me, Loretta's fine, it sounds like someone's being a wingman, like, all right, we're at a bar, you take Nancy, I'll take Loretta. But when you look at the lyrics, it feels more like a couple that's breaking up and they're dividing up their CD collection, and one of them gets to take the Nancy Griffith CDs, the other one takes the Loretta Lynn CDs.
Wow.
And I got a little bit of that from people's interpretations online, actually multiple people's interpretations online. It's like, oh, that totally fits with the other lyrics. That's totally cool.
Now, have you ever had to break up with someone and split the music?
Yes. Yes, but it was pretty easy. Because the girl that I dated, pretty much the only one that I ever had this problem with, was into a lot more pop music than I was. So it was really easy for me to say, yeah, you can take the Madonna albums and the, and which I eventually rebought, by the way, I did rebuy all of those. Yeah, for the most part, it was a pretty easy division. How about you?
I've been in the situation once, and it was easy because the person who I was splitting, the girl I was splitting the music with, was into everything I wasn't. So it was posies, and it was very easy to draw that line and just go. She didn't want to have anything to do with Metallica or Dream Theater, so I was good.
easy decision there.
Take everything but the Dream Theater. We're fine. Go.
Right.
Have fun.
She's like, yeah, no spread problem.
Spread your wings. Go. Be free.
Next one on the list is Enough from the brand new Constellation album, or one of the newer albums.
They
there
spelled it, it's UFO.
Be sure the task is great, and I the day be sure the task is great, and I
that's a callback to our fabulous Thunderbirds show. really cool chord progression on this one too. I didn't write down into my notes for this one, but I remember it being a very cool flipping around of the sound. More so on my bonus track. It's a double bonus track. Stupid from Dulcinea.
And it's frightening. Ooh, I didn't expect that from you. It's blinding. Serious, are you seriously? I am feeling really stupid now.
I liked this song. I really did. So I'm glad you picked it as a bonus.
Yeah, the way I wrote it down, the chords fold around each other like origami. Like you're listening to this thing, and this chord wraps around the previous one, and this next one like layers on the last one. It's hard to describe, but if you listen to it, maybe that description will make sense. But it's from Dulcinea, and it's called Stupid, and I really, really liked it. How about you, Hammond?
Okay,
did you have any music that you liked?
I did. So this was not level 42 for me, but it right. wasn't Fabulous Thunderbirds or Mushroomhead for me either.
Sure. Well, there was hopefully a lot for you to discover in this one.
There
right?
was. Like, I really enjoyed the fact that a ton of this, I had no idea what I was getting into. And hearing the band grow was actually really interesting for me because I didn't know them very well. I knew two songs.
Right.
And to hear them evolve musically and as songwriters was actually kind of cool. So, my first one is from Bread and Circus. It's Scenes from a Vinyl Recliner.
Okay.
I like the sound of it, but I also like the story behind it, the point of view of this life. And I found it a very interesting song. I actually listened to it twice just because I wanted to make sure I really did like this one.
Huh. I love the title.
It's great.
Yeah.
I picked Fall Down from Dulcinea. Which, all the cards on the table, when you and I first talked about it, I butchered the title and described it only by its cover. And you helped me figure it out. Don't you remember that?
Oh, yes, totally. I totally remember that. Yes. Yeah, that's for one of their hits. I mean, their hits are great. This mm-hmm. is such a, it's such a really good hit of theirs. So I'm glad you included it.
Yeah, and at number 2 or 3 on their all-time playlist. And I totally see why.
Yeah.
Whatever I Fear from Coil. Finds open arms to greet me and friends to feed me. I sicken myself so much, and you eat my kind for breakfast. You eat my kind. Whatever I feel the most is whatever I see before me. Whenever I let my guard down, whatever I was ignoring. Whatever I feel the most is whatever I see before me. It was made my list, and it might also be a hit. I don't know well enough to say, but if it's not, it should be. Mm-hmm. It's catchy. It's got a nice sound to it. It still is dripping in 90s kind of post-pop angst, but I'm okay mm-hmm. with that.
Right.
Number 4 is called Hobbit on the Rocks, and it's from the Syrup album. And I had to throw it in there because it was recorded and released well before the films, and they are not a prog band, because prog bands are horribly notorious for leaning on
Tolkien
for their inspiration.
Totally
so I
are.
I had to call them out and give them credit for being ahead of the trend and not a prog band.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, it's funny, and it's a, you know, reading the title,
you'd get it some rain fare.
Exactly. It's like, I'll take a Hobbit on the Rocks, please. Yeah, totally does. And talk to the man if you feel he's talking to. And the Hobbit on the Rocks is crying. And the fish upon the docks are dying. Yeah.
And my last one is So Long Sunny from Architect of the Ruin. And I just liked it. Like I said, Architect of the Ruin, I think, is my favorite of the ones we listened to. And it was hard for me to pick one song from the EP that was better than the other, so I just picked it. And I really enjoy this EP. And I hope you find what you're missing. Settle your mind, I keep wishing so long. Where people are as far as their Toad knowledge, but if you're coming in relatively fresh, you know, hit a greatest hits and then listen to Architect of the Ruin and come back, because you can see their growth and you can see where they've gone, and then maybe come back and listen to the older stuff and see how they're going to get there.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a good way to do it, because the new album is such a solid one that it doesn't feel like it's got a greatest hit on there. So it's a good balance of like, all right, you like sorry, the cat just jumped on the desk and is like a freaking bulldozer knocking everything over. But
you
know,
you caramel hammer going on the ground.
Right, my caramel hammer. No, that's magnetic, so it sticks to the bulletin board to the right of me. But no, you can combine that with the greatest hits, because it doesn't feel like you're going to have some overlap, right? It feels like it's going to be a new experience going from A to B, for sure.
And you really do get a picture of where they were and where they went. And that really is helpful when you're listening to an entire catalog of a band. Or,
right.
Or first experiencing a band.
Yeah. Yep. I think I totally would agree with that. And so there you go. Just do that. Start with the greatest hits. Then listen to the Spotify collection that we've put together of our bonus tracks, and then continue on with the rest of Architect of the Ruin after that. I think that's absolutely the way to go.
Yeah.
Perfect. That is going to do it for our talk about Toad the Wet Sprocket. I really, you know, just to kind of put a book or an end cap on this, I really, really enjoyed this week. And I really could only say that aside from the soundtrack stuff and the two albums that I already had, I really enjoyed all the new stuff that I listened to that was unfamiliar with these guys. Let's talk about next week. Next week is one of those great episodes we do every season where we don't just focus on one band, but kind of a musical genre. We like to do the year thing, and then we like to do a genre episode. That genre this time is the Rat Pack. So your Frank Sinatra, your Sammy Davis Jr., your Dean Martin, your Joel Grey.
Your Jerry Lewis.
Your Jerry Lewis, good example. Right, all that stuff. Your Richard Cheese, no, I'm kidding about that. Not a chance. But yeah, the Rat Pack. So music of the Rat Pack, and really I bet, you know, three quarters of it's really going to be the holy trinity of Sinatra, Martin, and Davis Jr. Because I think those were the guys that really released the bulk of the music that's attributed to the Rat Pack. I don't see a lot of Joel Grey or Joey Bishop stuff as prominent as those three.
And it's funny, each one of them had their own spin on what the lounge music was.
Right, right. So. But that's next week. So between now and then, let's say you want to get in touch with us. Email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter at the Soundography is the way you do that. Everything else is right there at soundography.com. You can download previous episodes of the show. You can comment right in the show notes of each episode. Just tell us what you think of that episode if you want. Or you can check out our playlist. We got a link right there to our Spotify playlist, a link to where you can buy the Greatest Hits album on Amazon. And I think I'm gonna point people towards the newly recorded All You Want album, because it helps Glenn Phillips, and for no other reason than he gets more money when you buy that than when you buy the older Greatest Hits albums.
You know what? The fact that it helps the band, I do appreciate that.
For sure. Heck yeah. Let's see. You can also support our Patreon. You will see a link on our homepage for Patreon right there.
And it works.
And it works. And so go there if you want to help support the show. You don't have to become a $50 patron and, you know, and do a whole episode based on your thing. You can support us with a few bucks. We like that, too. We like all of you equally, like our children.
And I'll throw in, too, that because of certain things that have happened in my life, I'll be a lot more interactive. And there'll be some things coming for the patrons on the through Patreon. That we've talked about but haven't really happened yet.
And that'll
start to happen.
Nice. Can't wait for that. Perfect. Well, that is going to do it for this edition of Soundography. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying that just about Soundography's it for tonight. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
The show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.